talk about a joint work, the talk's kind of based on joint work with Ivan and with Amir. So let me begin by a formal statement of KPZ universality, 1 + 1 dimension. So formally speaking, the mathematical statement of KPZ universality goes like this. We are interested in a class of random interface growth in 1 + 1 dimensions. We are given a height function of some interface parameterized by time and space, where space is one dimension. And this thing H here grows randomly. If I center the height function by its mean, and then I scale the deviation space-time this way, time is by -3, space by -2, and scale down the height by epsilon, going as 1, 2, and 3. This thing is conjectured to converge to a universal process H if the initial condition is scaled properly to match some limited initial condition. So if I take two different models in the KPZ universality in such a way that the initial condition match asymptotically, the conjecture is that they both scale to some limiting process independent of the details of the model. Okay. So examples in KPZ universality, of course, include the KPZ equation itself, which is a continuous model of 1 + 1 dimensional interface growth, and the asymmetric simple exclusion process. Sure, many of you have heard of it, but I'm just going to quickly go over it. So it's a model of interacting particle system on a discrete integer lattice. So each particle performs continuous time asymmetric random walk with probability with rate q1 jumping to left by one step, rate q-1 jumping one step to left, okay? Under constraint that each side can hold at most one particle, okay? So for such a particle system, I cook up a high corresponding growth model by plotting a line with slope 1 if I see a particle, and plotting a line with slope -1 if I don't see a particle. That gives me a high profile consisting of line with slope plus and -1. And the dynamics on the particle system just tells me that in continuous time, I'm going to flip a peak to a value with rate q1, and a value to a peak with rate q-1. And generally, I'm going to take q-1 bigger than q1 so that the growth is asymmetric. Okay. So the conjecture here, well, it has been proved that for specific initial conditions, say the narrow wedge initial condition, if you look at the height fluctuation at the origin for KPZ equation and for ASAP, after a long time, this has scaling, those of them go to G-retrace-Williams distribution. Now, I think it's fair to say that such a mathematical statement is currently out of reach, very hard to prove without integrability. The best that has been done for a non-integrable model is that you can get some sort of bound, matching upper and lower bound of the size of the fluctuation, but has not been proved that it converges to an explicit limiting distribution for non-integrable models. Okay. Now for, yes. Is exactly solvable. Alright, so for that reason, I'm gonna switch to a simpler question, which is commonly phrased as the weak universality. I'm gonna start with an example, which is a theorem of Bertin and Giacomi from 97. Okay. So look at ASAP, which we talked about before. Now, instead of having them asymmetric, instead of having Q1 strictly bigger than Q, sorry, instead of having Q-1 strictly bigger than Q1, I'm going to make them going down to 0, make it asymptotically symmetric. I'm going to take the difference of them to be very small, which I call epsilon. Okay? At the same time doing this, I'm scaling space, time, and the height fluctuation this way, 1, 2, and 4. Okay? And this is the center in which we did before. Okay? If you look at the height fluctuation this way, this thing then converges to some continuous object, which is the solution to the KPZ equation itself. So this is saying that if I simultaneously tune in some of the parameters of the model I'm looking at while I'm doing scaling, if I do it properly, then what's going to happen is just that the discrete object then converges to a continuous object, which is the KPZ equation. So the weak universality can be formulated this way. The discrete models in KPZ universality converges to KPZ equation itself if we tune parameter properly while doing scaling of space, time, and height.
Sir, H is small. The height of the interface.
Right. Yeah, this one. Okay. So here, I give you an example where, you know, if you tune space time, if you scale space time and height according to this scaling, it goes to Cayley equation. Now, before I move on and tell you more about weakening and scaling, I guess the question is, what kind of scaling are we considering here? How do I know I should scale, you know, this thing this way in order to get a limit? One way to understand this is just that you take a generic scaling of space and time, generic, okay, and height function, and plug it into the KPZ equation. Do the calculation formally. Okay. This is what you're going to have. Okay. If I scale space, time, and height this way, A, Z, and B, this is what I'm going to get for the KPZ equation. Now, if you sit down, you know, take a few minutes and write the discrete Lagrangian equation of A step. What you're going to see is that this parameter here, this asymmetric parameter here, contributes to the strength of the nonlinearity here. You just sit down and write the discrete equation, you'll see that's what happened. So the effect of tuning this asymmetry to zero is really the same as replacing this 1/2 by f 1/2. And then you tune down this parameter here. Okay. Now once you do this, it's an easy exercise to see that you plug in 1, 2, and 4 every turn on the KPZ equation stay invariant. For example, if you plug in A equal to 2, then A equal to 4, this is F equals to 0. If you plug in A equals 2, this is 4. Then A equals 4, this is minus 1. So you got 0, but you got minus 1 from B, which cancel that F function. So this term also stays invariant. So the type of scaling is such that while scaling space, time, and various parameter, you work out the equation to see which thing it perturbs, and then after you carry that through, this should keep KPZ equation invariant. Those are the scaling which indicate weakener solid. So I just say a few words that this scaling of Bertini-Giacomo is not the only scaling which leave KPZ equation invariant. There are some other scaling which has been used in the literature in different contexts. So for example, you have the weak noise scaling which corresponds to choosing ZAB equal to 4 to 0. And instead of tuning this down, you tune down the noise by F1. Okay. So there are other different possible choices depending on what kind of discrete model you have in mind. Now, so the strategy we're going to approach the universality is by using the Hofgaard transformation. So this is the KPZ equation. Okay. Now, at continuous level, if you formally apply a Hofgaard transformation, which is that if you raise the exponential of the solution of the KPZ equation, you do the calculus, you're going to see is that it's going to take this KPZ equation to the other equation, which is the stochastic heat equation with multiplicative noise here. Okay. Now, one good thing about the stochastic heat equation is that it doesn't have this annoying nonlinear term here. So the structure of the stochastic heat equation is actually very convenient for us to get various types of moment bounds. So if we can take a problem of discrete interface growth and convert it into some sort of discrete stochastic heat equation, that is actually make the whole thing much more tractable problem. So our strategy is going to take the whole Hofgaard transformation to whatever discrete model we have in mind and convert it to a version of the stochastic heat equation and trying to show that this discrete stochastic heat equation converges to a continuous one. And just one more word about the stochastic equation. It's linear in Z. Therefore, there's a very standard theory which tells you that the solution to this equation is unique. So once you show convergence to the equation, it automatically tells you that the limit is sort of unique. So if you have two different models, you show convergence to the stochastic equation, tells you that the limiting distribution of them after you scale properly are the same. For ASAP, Bertini-Giacomo actually utilized a version of this, which is that there's a discrete Hofgaard transformation applied to asymmetric simple exclusion process discovered by Giacomo. So this is a strategy used by Bertini and Giacomo. Now, with all this said, here comes a question. So if I give you a discrete model of interface growth, how do I know when there's going to be a Hopf-Bochsch transformation, right? If there is a Hopf-Bochsch transformation, then this strategy would apply. If there's not, well, the answer is pretty sad that generically, if you just come up with a generic model in KBD class, there's no such a transformation. But there's a positive side to this question, which is that at least you have them for all integrable models. Now, why is that true? Well, this is a slide borrowed from Ivan. Yes, I mean, if you just raise through exponential of the discrete height function, it should look like a discrete stochastic equation. No, that's what I mean by discrete transformation.
Sorry, you say for all integrable models, does it mean that for all what you know, or?
Yes, for all what I knew back when this slide was made. So actually, I believe there are a few more that is cropping up, but
there is no statement that if model is integrable in a certain sense, then you fail.
It's in the sense that whatever is below this, under this picture. Yes. Okay. So this is a list of many of the integral models that has been worked out in the KBD class. And in this picture, on top of that, you see stochastic higher spin vertex process. So this error means that by degenerating some of the parameters of the models on the top, you converge to one of the other models on the bottom. Okay. So I guess from this picture, it's clear that everything goes back to this model. So as soon as we can derive the Hopf-Bochsch transformation of this model here by degenerating various parameters, you get the Hopf-Bochsch transformation of anyone on the bottom. So that's the way I'm going to proceed. I'm just going to focus on this stochastic high-spin vertex process. There are many different ways of phrasing this model. I'm gonna phrase it in terms of some discrete time, discrete space exclusion process. Okay, so it's a discrete time exclusion process on the one-dimensional integer lattice. So particles are labeled ordered, so y1, y2, y3, all the way to y infinity. Actually, particle can be two-sided. So you have infinite particles potentially on both sides. They're labeled from right to left. Okay. And then there are some funny parameters, Q, alpha, nu, and J. For simplicity, I'm going to assume J is 1, although our result holds for generic J, which is a positive integer. Okay. The way the model is defined is this. So it's a discrete time model. So all I need to tell you is that at some given time, how do I update this model from time t to time t plus 1? I'm going to do a parallel update from right to left. So assume that this particle yn minus 1 has decided how it's going to be updated. The way this particle moves is that if this particle decided to move, then with this probability, the particle jumped one step to its right. If that particle didn't decide to move, then jump one step to the right with another probability, which involves alpha, nu, q, all these parameters here, and the size of the gap between two consecutive particles. All right, just some definition. Okay. All right. So what is the Hopf-Bochsch transformation? Well, we need one more parameter, which is the thing that measures the overall density of the particle system. You know, there's one more parameter which you can tune about the particle system, which is what is the value of density that you have in mind. This rho is not the density, but it measures the density.
Sorry.
Yes.
Where is the J?
J is 1. So.
Okay.
There's a more complicated version of this, which I won't talk. Yeah. All right. So this is the Hopf-Bochsch transformation, which looks pretty hard to find. You have this bunch of funny numbers, which define explicitly. And just pay attention to this Q here. Q of nt is this number Q raised to this power. Okay? YN, remember YN is the location of the nth particle. So here you're going to think this YN as the height function. The location of attack particle is replacing our definition of the height. Now, what we do here is that instead of looking a particle label particle, we're going to do a shift in, you know, X, instead of looking the label at fixed, the particle at fixed label X, we're going to shift the label as time goes on leaving X plus mu to mu is like velocity, which carry you further and further into larger indices. Okay? So this is the position of, this is Q to the position of this label particle. And with some horrible constants. But this is nothing but saying that it's exponential with log Q times, you know, this particle and some center in space and time. It's just that. Okay. So what we prove that for this explicit exponential function, if you look at the discrete increment of it, it satisfies this sort of discrete stochastic heat equation. Now, there's a center x plus mu here just because of the way I define q, but you should really think of this as x and x. You know? It's the time increment at the same space, at the same space location up to this funny shift.
What's rho then?
What is rho? Rho is the thing that measures, you know, can depending on what is you have in mind, the initial density, you need to adjust your definition of the Hopf-Rho transformation accordingly. Right, in ASAP, you know, if you do density 1/2, then here you have probably rho, I don't know what, but then for different density, you need to put different things here.
You suggest
a
quadrant or something?
It could be flagged, could be Brownian. For narrow wedge, you need to do a little bit change, but not too much, which I won't go. It doesn't have to be flat. It has, you know, here there's no. Yes. Yeah. So here, what L is a generator of some explicit random walk, which I'll get to, and W is some explicit martingale, which I'll get to later. So what you should really think of this is that L is a discrete analog of Laplacian because it's a generator of some random walk. And W is the discrete analog of some Y noise because it's martingale in time. So here is L. It's the generator of some random walk, which I denote R, which is written in terms of some other random walk R prime given like this. It's a random walk on the integer lattice, which has this probability of jumping one step and successfully have another probability of jumping more steps. Okay. And then for this random walk, I'm gonna center it and tilt it this way to get a new random walk. In order to make sense, to make sure that this new thing is a probability law, to make sure that the right-hand side sum to one, which it does. Okay. So it's some random walk, one-sided, but then I center and tilt it. It's centered. Okay. Now what about the martingale? Well, we have the explicit expression of the sort of cross variance of the martingale, which is the expectation at the same time at different location of this term, which is given explicitly like that. Okay. The point is that here, because things are kind of dependent, how one particle jumps looks up to another particle. So you can possibly expect that W here is an exact noise. Things are correlated in space. So the point is that here you have exponentially decaying, because new alpha are there strictly after one, you have exponentially decaying factor in the distance of the 2 points you're looking at. So over large space, these two things, W's, looks as if they were independent in space, if you're going far away from each other. And in time, they are martingales, so it's not hard to imagine that if you do a continuous scaling in space and time, this thing W here goes to the space time one. P is the the semi group of that ring. L is a generator, P is a semi group. It's of this random. It's the probability of it jumping. you can think of it as the discrete heat current.
Next slide. But the WPS is defined independently of the state, or?
W is defined independently of that. What is this?
Okay. So, so with that in mind, it's not hard to imagine that there exists certain type of scaling of space-time under which, the thing goes to a stochastic equation. So here's the scaling. Okay? I scale space-time, and I let Q to be e to the minus epsilon, so that Q goes to 1 in a specific pattern. Okay? And then simultaneously I'm scaling space and time this way. Now the exact formula is not really relevant. It's just that I'm filling space time as epsilon to minus 1 minus 3, and then simultaneously I'm scaling a high function epsilon because 2 is defined this way. And under this scaling, we show that if the initial condition satisfies certain moment condition and converges to a limiting profile, then the whole process, as a process in space-time, converges to a solution to the stochastic heat equation. All right. So that was the story about integral models. For integral model, you can cook up exact Hofgaard transformation, after which can show convergence using standard theories. Now, what about non-integral model where you don't have Hofgaard transformation? Okay. What about that? So for this, I'm going to look at a specific example, which is, again, exclusion process, as before, but now I'm allowing particles to jump more than one step. Okay. So particle here allowed to jump one step to the right all the way to m step to the right, and then one step to the left all the way to m step to the right, so to the left with rate q1, q2, all the way to qn, 2 minus 1 all the way to 2 minus n. It's the same model as before, except the particles are allowed to jump generic steps. Okay. To some notation, the occupation variable is denoting 1 plus 1, sorry, plus 1 minus 1 if a site is occupied or unoccupied. Okay. So what I'm going to do is that I'm going to consider the case where the wall is almost symmetric. Okay. So if you ignore this and that here, the rate here is a half of kappa I and a half of kappa I, so it's symmetric. But on top of that, I'm biasing the walk slightly to one side by these strands epsilon. Okay. So this should be consistent. This should ring a bell with the ASAP, the weakly asymmetric scaling of ASAP as before. Before we have Q1 and Q minus 1, and they are symmetric, but with a biased epsilon to the left. Okay. Here I'm doing it more generic. I'm having n steps. Now, I pair up each of jump of the same size, two steps to the right, two steps to the left, but then I'm making them symmetric up to this small factor epsilon here. Okay.
Any constraints to gamma?
Later. Yes. Yes. Okay. So our result is not the most. It's not the most general it should be. Okay. So first of all, only can jump up to three steps. 1, 2, or 3, but not anymore. Okay. And then
basically, we just for
is there what?
Do you?
It's a technical. It's a technical.
Technical.
Yeah. It's just some. This is technical. That is technical. Which we'll get to. Okay. So kappa, remember kappa is a symmetric part of the jumping rate. Which here we can take it to be generic. I have this normalization. Usually I'm after one, but it's not relevant. It can happen in general. But once you fix that, the asymmetric is also fixed. The asymmetric, these gammas, are functions of those kappas up to some proportional number gamma, which measure the overall strength of the asymmetry. So you can tune the overall strength of the asymmetry, but the exact structure of that asymmetry is determined by those symmetric parts given by this formula. So we have these two technical assumptions here. Okay.
But could you do without them, or you don't know?
I couldn't, but definitely you should hold without them. The proof, the theorem is only that, but the theory, the truth is that I should be more gentle. Yeah. So, and then you do the same 1-4 skill and back to ASAP, and the same thing will follow that the Hopko transform converges to the stochastic ED question. Okay. I guess it's almost time for cookie. So I'll just say a few words about why we arrive at this condition. So the idea is basically you derive the discrete Langevin equation. It's pretty messy, but you just sit down and derive the equation of the Hopko transformation, okay? Where mg is some martingale. Okay, I'm not going to worry about the martingale because it behaves, you know, analytically speaking, behaves much nicer than the other thing that we're going to deal with. The thing is that I'm expecting to see a Laplacian in front of this, out of this mesh. I want you to see some Laplacian of v, so that this whole thing looks more or less like a stochastic ED equation. Okay. How do I do it? Well, I just write down what it's supposed to be for a discrete Laplacian. I'm writing down what's supposed to be for a discrete Laplacian that involves everything within three steps, okay, with some generic parameter kappa pro dot. And what I'm going to do is I'm just going to tail expand this thing, expand it out, and then compare what I got here from the Laplacian to the discrete equation which I wrote down for the particle system. I want them to match. And if you do this very carefully, term by term, you'll see that they don't quite match. And the reason is that there's some discrete detail which doesn't allow you to match terms. Okay? So you have something that looks similar, but if you forget the discrete details of them. So there's actually a trick, which is that whenever a term, the difference of two terms can be written as a discrete gradient. You can sort of ignore them because they smooth out better when you average over space. So that allows me to sort of manipulate things and to equate terms I want them to equate. I want to be equal to each other. Okay, they're not actually equal to each other, but they're only approximately equal to each other. But this only allows me to match them up to some constraint beyond which I cannot do more. So the rest is by just imposing constraints on the parameters. Okay? Whatever I cannot match, I'm just going to force them to be equal to each other by imposing this constraint.
Are you sure it's not an integrable?
Is there any integrable model which allow particle to exchange rank? Beta onza doesn't apply in that case, right? I don't know. So yeah, so that's, you know, that's how this thing arrives. And this m equal to 3 is just that there's some cubic terms in this expansion which we don't know how to deal with, but luckily for m less than equal to 3, they're automatically of gradient form, so you just ignore it. And that's how
it's very unlikely that the general cases he's looking at are integrable, because one of the signatures of being integrable is that you have these dualities, and the duality would imply an exact Hopko transform, but an approximate Hopko transform. So it doesn't seem like it.
Yeah. So I guess that's concluded.